What does the turmoil in Libya mean for the global economic recovery?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning. From APM, American Public Media in New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. The oil company Shell has moved all of its foreign workers out of Libya, following a similar move by BP. And the instability in Libya, which is a major oil-producing nation, continues to sink global markets. We'll get to the numbers in a moment, but first let's bring in Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, Jeremy.
So tell us why investors are so concerned about what's going on right now in Libya.
Well, as you say, Libya's a big oil and gas producer, up to 2 million barrels a day. And the fear is that there may be not just a temporary interruption in that flow of oil and gas. The worry is that a new government might come to power in Libya, which is very nationalistic, and might kick out Western oil companies. And that could lead to a longer lasting fall in supply. And that could push oil prices even higher.
And Stephen, at what point do we have to worry about higher oil prices actually slowing down the global economic recovery?
Well, not yet, but there's a cumulative effect here. We've had a whole series of supposedly temporary hikes in the price of oil and other commodities. And economists are worrying that there'll come a point when companies will decide these are not temporary after all, and they'll push up their prices to cover their costs. Here's Professor Dominic Swords of the Henley Business School.
The longer and the more spikes and temporary blips we have, I think our worry is that the expectations of continued inflation of commodity prices as well as oil prices gets built into the system.
And he says there'll come a point in the not too distant future, perhaps, when central banks will have to take notice and have to curb that inflation by pushing up the cost of borrowing. And that's when the economic recovery will be in greatest danger.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thanks, Stephen.
Okay, Jeremy.
Well, it's election day in Chicago. Residents there are voting for a mayor to replace Richard Daley, who's held the office since 1989. One of the issues in the race is a rule that's been on the books for decades. It requires anyone who works for the city to live in the city. Chicago Public Radio's Tony Arnold reports.
The six candidates running for mayor have found few positions to agree on, and Chicago's requirement that its 35,000 police, fire, and other workers live in the city is no different. Outgoing mayor Richard Daley has argued that without the requirement, those workers would live in the suburbs, thereby not pay city taxes and do their shopping outside Chicago.
If you go to Detroit, you go to Cleveland, you go to Philadelphia, talk to all those mayors, they'll tell you. They lost all their middle class.
Some of the current mayoral candidates have said they'd consider waiving the residency requirement as part of contract negotiations with city unions. Dawn Clark Netch teaches municipal law at Northwestern University. She says even if the requirement is ditched, it's not going to necessarily mean an exodus of city workers.
In this economy, I mean, how many people are going to pack up and they can't sell their house anyway probably right now and move just because the residency requirement is abandoned? It allows them to do that.
Netch says it's old Chicago lore that city workers live in neighborhoods right on the edge of the city limits. In Chicago, I'm Tony Arnold from Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Well, the unrest in Libya is sending global stocks down this morning. Hong Kong down more than 2%. Paris down about 1.3%. Home Depot said this morning that its profit rose 72% last quarter because customers are spending more money on home improvement. But Walmart says its U.S. customers rolled back a bit last quarter. Wall Street closed yesterday. On Friday, the Dow jumped 73 points to close at 12,391.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, insuring more than 75 million customers worldwide and providing retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S., AllianzUSA.com. And by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com.
Okay, it's quiz time here on the Marketplace Morning Report, and our quiz master, Stefan Richter of theglobalist.com, joins us now from Washington. Good morning, Stefan.
Good morning, Jeremy. Are you ready for today's quiz?
I am ready.
Okay, this one is in the context of all the budget debates and what costs money in the United States and for U.S. taxpayers. So my question for you today is this. How much does it cost per year to support one U.S. service member deployed in Afghanistan?
Mm.
Is it A, $67,000 a year, B, $132,000 a year, see a staggering $685,000 per year, or D, an unbelievable $1.2 million a year?
Well, I am going to guess that it is on the higher end of things, but I will just go with $600,000 a year and not $1.2 million.
Not quite. This number would be right for the war in Iraq, according to numbers from the Washington-based Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. Uh-huh. $685,000, that's, by the way, over 10 times more than the cost of a soldier deployed in World War II. So these wars are getting more expensive all the time.
All right, so I'll guess the $1.2
million. $1.2 million per year. Of course, the least of that is wages or salary for the soldiers themselves. Most of it is due to the sheer lack of infrastructure in Afghanistan, its geographical position as a landlocked nation. And the biggest single item in this? Fuel costs.
Wow.
Per troop deployed, $200,000 to $350,000 a year. Huh. Just in fuel costs. With all this heavy stuff that's coming in now, that number is probably going to go up as the oil prices are going up.
All right, Stefan Richter, editor-in-chief at The Globalist. You can find out more about the world at theglobalist.com. Thanks again, Stefan.
Good to be with you today.
And finally, what is the most livable city in the U.S.? Well, the Economist Intelligence Unit says it's Pittsburgh. That's based on everything from culture and education to safety and infrastructure. Honolulu is number two in the U.S. But get this, not a single American city made the top 25 most livable cities in the world. Apparently, Canada and Australia are where it's at, according to The Economist. You can see where other cities ranked at marketplace.org. In New York, which is apparently number 53, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The typical career of an NFL player is about 4 years, so a lockout is more than just a contract dispute. It could mean idling for a quarter of your career.
So when you talk about taking benefits and taking money away and not having a season, that's not sitting good with me.
I'm Tess Vigeland, the Freakonomics of Football, next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.